Hi, this is Robert O'Reilly. My name is Gowron. Honor to you and your house. You're listening to Trek FM.
Theo Greyhawk.
Another episode of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to the next generation. I'm your host this week, Amy Nelson, and joined with me today is Richard Marquez. Richard, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you today?
We're doing good. We are down a person, though. Richard, what happened?
Oh, man. I don't know. Lee got curious. He went into the shuttlecraft of Elbaz. And we all know how weak that little shuttlecraft is, but he got stuck in the Delta Quadrant because he was too curious to check out this new wormhole, and now he's stuck there because it collapsed.
Well, we are going to have to then do our best to get him back, and it's a good thing because we today, this week, are going to be talking about the road to Voyager, and as we know, Voyager is in the Delta Quadrant, so it's a good thing Lee's there. And thankfully, rummaging through his quarters, I found his pad that has all of his notes. And so we will continue on our mission this week, and we will just have his notes to read from. How about that, Richard?
Awesome. How convenient that is.
Yes, it is. I'm the snoop out of all the hosts.
That's okay. I'll cover you.
All right. Well, before we get actually moving along into our episode, I wanted to give a shout out. We've received a subspace transmission, and it is from Joel Gates, and just wanted to read what he said in an email, and we're so grateful to get these emails. So if you ever need to, please go to trekfm.com/contact, and you can send us an email as well. So Joral says, "You guys are great. Love the show. Even though I'm a few years behind, it is very fun to listen along with others that are as into Trek as me. So thank you again for sending us that message, and look forward to having you comment and send us more messages." Yeah.
That's always awesome. Fun. I love the fan mail that we get.
Yeah, it is so fun to hear what they have to say and what they hear, you know, because we do it. And then what do they actually connect with? So it's pretty fun. We would also like to remind you guys, we are doing our iTunes giveaway. And what do we have to give away? A fabulous, complete Next Generation Blu-ray set. So excited. We appreciate the donation from Ju Kim, a listener on the network and frequent commenter on the Babel Conference. And so we have this set and we would love to give it away. So during the month of February, go ahead and rate our show on iTunes and go ahead and comment. Review will put you in the drawing for this amazing gift set. All right. So thank you for those iTunes reviews. We look forward to reading them, and we will have our drawing at the end of February. So go ahead and leave us your 5-star reviews. Well, Richard, we are going to be talking about the road to Voyager. We already did our road to DS9, Deep Space Nine. So very excited to talk about a little bit of Voyager here. I have seen all of Voyager. Have you, Richard?
I can't even tell you how many times I've rerun that show. I actually have... I want to say 1 through 4 in the original. Well, obviously it's only in DVD, yeah. But like I have 1 through 4 in DVD form, and then 5 through 7 I have it in VHS.
Oh, wow.
But I don't have a working VHS player anymore because now that Netflix is working. So yeah.
I will say that Voyager, I have seen more of Voyager than I have of Deep Space Nine. My brother, who I've spoken quite a bit about, he really likes Voyager. It's his second favorite. He still likes Next Gen. Oh, maybe he likes the original. Anyways, so he has, I think, seasons 3 through 7 on DVD. And so I've had them and have watched them quite a bit more than Deep Space Nine. So I'm a little more familiar with the characters. So oh,
we need to break that habit of yours. We gotta you gotta watch DS9 as well.
I know. Let's talk about the obvious setup that Next Generation did for Voyager, and that is with the Borg. And we have iBorg, which is the episode in Next Generation where we are introduced to Hugh. And in that episode, there is a Borg scout ship that gets disconnected and they save Hugh. They consider sending him back to the collective with a virus of some kind to spread and to kill all of the Borg. However, they don't do that. But what they did do inadvertently was send Hugh back with a sense of individuality. And then that is followed up with Descent, Part 1 and Part 2, where that individuality spread to a Borg cube, and they are left in disarray, and then we have Lore come in to organize them, and Lore is now their leader, and hijinks ensue. Right?
Yep. That is exactly what the episode is. Yep. And then we learn about Data's emotion chip, or at least how he gets it, or at least he gets in possession of it, which I find funny. It's like a little Pac-Man, or at least it looks like a little Pac-Man, and yet when we get to Generations, it looks like a Chex Mix. So,
yeah, it evolved.
It grew.
Well, is that really the actual chip, or was that the one that Lore had? And then he gets the emotion chip from his father?
Well, there was only one chip, and he got it in Brothers, or at least he installed it to Lore by accident. But, like, yeah, I'm assuming it was because he put it inside the box and he was going to phaser it and destroy it altogether, right, which, you know, wouldn't have been good. So I'm assuming that's the chip, because I actually thought about that, and then that he did that. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's probably... Yeah, that probably is. But that's such a small chip.
It is.
I mean, to have so much emotions and to actually have memories of his father and everything, I can only imagine. I would assume it would be like a big Icelandic chip or something like that, or, you know, yeah.
Right.
But yeah, it's a good episode. I actually thoroughly enjoyed this episode. I really wished they would have said something in Voyager. I guess you could say Unimatrix Zero is one of the episodes that kind of goes along with Descent Part 2, Part 1 and 2, as well as iBorg. That whole certain drones are coming out of the, in a sense, getting awakened into this... into this dreamland that's called Unimatrix Zero. And I guess that's kind of the same storyline. I really wish they would have connected it to each other. But I mean, yeah, it makes a good story. And I mean, they could have actually had an ally, in the Delta Quad, or at least Voyager could have had an ally to help them out or something like that. I mean, maybe cast the same guy that did Hugh, and then they could just help each other out. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a very interesting episode.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see the correlation of what Next Gen did with Hugh versus 7 of 9, you know, and how they're both exploring their individuality. And you can just sort of see the differences there, but really how it was set up that, yeah, we could take one of the Borg and, you know, individually they're not going to be as destructive as their entire collective, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There was Lee says for his comments. Well, also in Descent, we have Dr. Crusher being captain. And so we get to see that. And Lee's comments were, I think a female captain was the natural choice for Voyager, but using Descent to trial run, how people would respond to that change was interesting. Star Trek is synonymous with equality, but the fact that they had to use an episode to showcase it wouldn't be a problem, a ratings killer, or that it might be a bridge too far to put a female in command chair is telling about this studio system at the time. So we do get this precursor of having a captain on the bridge, a female captain on the bridge, with Dr. Beverly Crusher. And she does make some very hard choices. I mean, she was told, you need to protect the people and the ship. And she does a great job commanding. And I think it does set up very well for how Janeway captains her ship as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. Definitely, it was a great preview to Voyager, whether anyone knew it or not. And it was I enjoyed her as the captain, and it was marvelous. I mean, yeah, she, like I said, I mean, it seemed like it, when she was commanding the Enterprise, it seemed like she was a natural. Like,
agreed.
It's like it was like seamlessly, like just like, oh, okay, I'll take command. And you know, before she never, you know, we always saw her, you know, command and all that kind of stuff, and it didn't feel right for whatever reason. Maybe she was nervous, or maybe she portrayed her character to be nervous or something like that, or at least that's how I saw it. And I have no problems with Beverly Crusher. I really wish there was more instead of, you know, seeing her kill everyone that was on her operating table.
Right.
Maybe not killing, but definitely didn't
not
know
saving.
What the hell. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. At least McCoy saved him. But like, it's like, I just really wish there was far more for Beverly Crusher. I mean, yeah, we saw Troy and all that in for command positions. And I actually like that episode. She seemed confident at first, and then she lost her confidence, and she brought it back up, and then she made the hard decisions to do whatever she needed to do. So, I mean, it's... Yeah, I absolutely love it. And it sucks that they had to preview it, but you know what? You know, money talks in a network, so they got to figure out, you know, what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, because she's left with a skeleton crew, and obviously the ones who are new to the Enterprise and the ones who, you know, are not your regulars. And so we have a cute little Lieutenant Tate, and she's a little unsure of herself. But Crusher, man, she's like, all right, let's just do this, and gives her a little pep talk. And the guy who's manning Worf Station, and he's like, well, I guess I'll have to be right with my calculations, you know. And she shows a great amount of trust in her crew. So Crusher does, and it's funny because I feel like they... when whoever comes in, like when Geordi took command, you know, and he had to be reassured, or in this case, when Crusher takes command, and I feel like they always go back, well, what would Picard do? And I'm like, I don't know if Picard really was as generous with his praise and generous with his like expectations as we see with Geordi, Troy, or Crusher. And Crusher just really helps to motivate and shows that she trusts them and that she believes in them. I think more so than we ever see Picard. I think Picard's is more, this is my expectation and you better live up to it, but it's unsaid. And so when Crusher is, you know, giving these commands and, all right, we are going to go into the sun, you know, because the Borg ship can't follow. I mean, that's some brave decision making. And I think it really shows how a female captain can be and does open the door for Janeway.
And you know what I find funny about that is that, okay, so the reason why I was laughing, it says that, so when I was remembering that entire scene, when they were thinking about going to the sun, she was like, oh yeah, it's Tate was saying, oh, it's like 400 degrees C. And I'm like, it's not C, it's Celsius. You don't say C, it's Celsius. All right.
Oh, I missed that.
And I'm like, you, oh, don't read the script verbatim. I mean, come on. You don't know what C means? Oh. Anyway, so that's what I was thinking. And then talking about that lieutenant, oh my gosh. I thought he was a complete jerk. I was like, oh, I was like, okay, mister. And, you know, maybe that's what they were trying to do, was portray that, you know, a female captain, see how they do with the whole entire male being a jerk because she's a female. Or I don't know if that's what exactly what they were trying to do, but that's what it seemed like. And then, funny enough, metaphasic shielding, thanks to Dr. Rega, she was also, you know, one of the main characters in the TNG Suspicions. So, yes. Funny enough, she would know that more than anyone.
Right. So another episode we wanted to highlight is Journey's End. And this is the episode where Wesley is just about ready to graduate from Starfleet Academy. And he comes on board the Enterprise, but is very aloof, distant, and sometimes a little downright mean and rude. But he goes down to Dorvan 5, and Dorvan 5 is a planet that's in the demilitarized zone with the Cardassians, and it is inhabited by Native Americans. And the Cardassians are coming, and they need the Native Americans need to be moved. And so we get this situation here, and Wesley meets Lakonta, who is one of the colony's holy men, and goes on a vision quest. And so we see Wesley deciding that graduating and staying with Starfleet is not correct for his path, and then Lakonta ends up being the traveler. But the Cardassian we see are very anxious to get control of their planet. And the Pueblo Revolt, as mentioned, and they are wanting to stay and not be removed again. And so that is Journey's End.
Yay, another Wesley Crusher episode. I mean, screech!
So let me give you Lee's thoughts here. And, of course, he says, Native Americans in space. Oh, Lee. This episode is bizarre because it's such an important part of the foundation of the Maquis and tying it into the politics of the Cardassians, and using a very on-the-nose comparison with the treatment of Native Americans in American history and showing that there's been zero progress by the 24th century. Throw in the return of the Traveler and Wesley Crusher, and it makes for quite the mishmash of ideas.
Yeah.
So I think it does why we wanted to highlight Journey's End, as Lee points out, is that we do see the Cardassians and how they are going to treat anyone within their realm of control. And so they're coming early to survey and see what buildings they're going to have and stuff like that. And the colony is just unwilling to leave. And it sort of almost begs the question. I mean, if they're, and at the end of the episode, they decide to stay and be under Cardassian rule, would they end up like the Maquis?
Yeah, this episode, to me, this one sets up Chakotay just a little bit more. And I guess if no one's a TNG fan, and they're going to miss this completely, it's going to come out of like left field or something like that, or right field, because no one hits her. but like it's going to come out of right field, and it's just, For me on this episode, it's very personal because it's a reenactment in a sense in the 24th century of my own people, because I'm Mescalero Indian, and my family is actually out in New Mexico in the Mescalero Indian Reservation. Now, close family, I'm a little bit more distant, but that's where my ancestry comes from. and it just, yeah, this one hits home really hard. I mean, they're being forced to relocate as they did throughout the United States, you know, a very painful and bloody chapter of the United States history. Ouch. I mean, there was no point of having Wesley there. There was no point. I mean, well, except for the Traveler, but really he didn't even resolve the problems. I mean, it's so in a sense you could have done without Wesley and the Traveler, but you know, it is season 7. So, you know, everyone's basically departing and
yeah,
funny
we
enough,
had to tie up the loose ends.
Right. Exactly. Tie up the loose ends. And it's funny because I was thinking about it. I was like, you know, he was in the wedding scene of Star Trek Nemesis, in the very beginning. And I'm like, you know, we never really hear about it. So I just looked it up and, it looks like Crusher went back to Starfleet, and now he works as an engineering on the USS Titan, Riker's ship. Sorry.
Uh-huh.
So just FYI, because I was thinking, whatever happened to him? I'm like, not that I care, but you know, I mean, it's Wesley Crusher. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Wesley. I'm not.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely a very. I mean, I don't know about everyone else, but that story, I know that I've seen it with, you know, family members, and I know that some of them took that a little bit hard, based on the content, because of, you know, we're Native Americans, so or
yeah. So, give me a quick rundown of, and let me know if I've got the parallels right. So this colony is going to choose to stay with Cardassian, and the Maquis is also in the demilitarized zone, and they are under Cardassian rule as well.
Dorvan 5 is on the wrong side of the border. They're in Cardassian space. So the demilitarized zone, there's no colonies, or at least there shouldn't be. There's no colonies, no bases, no ships are allowed in that area. And then the Maquis, which are closer to the Badlands, closer to Bajor, which I don't know how close Dorvan 5 is, but like basically they're colonies that are along the neutral zone or close to the neutral zone or even in the neutral zone. And basically, the Cardassians are harassing them, and or vice versa, and basically it turns into an armed militia.
And so Starfleet is not getting involved, and so the Bajor or the Maquis, they take it upon themselves to fight the Cardassians because they feel that they're being mistreated. Mm-hmm. And they're not supposed to be getting supplies from Starfleet, but yet we see evidence of Starfleet guns and stuff like that. Is that correct?
Yep. Smuggling. Yeah. Officers smuggling weapons in. And then we'll talk about that in preemptive strike because they talk about type 8 phasers and photon torpedoes, which is,
right,
you know, not something a small freighter has. That's a starship.
Right. Okay. All right, so that's Journey's End. And again, listeners, let us know if you think the colony would actually end up fighting like the Maquis after they are under Cardassian rule. Would they end up the same way?
Just want to say, everyone, if you listen to the first few minutes, they mention Earl Grey, you know, with Admiral Nechayev. So, you know, hear out for it, you know. Ding!
Yes, Picard goes all out and welcomes Admiral Nechayev. And again, she's fabulous, Admiral. We'll save that for another time. All right. Well, that does lead us right into preemptive strike. And this is the one with Ensign Ro. And she is sent in to infiltrate a Maquis group. And Richard, what else? Tell us about the episode.
So basically, the Maquis are becoming a problem for the Federation because it's threatening the treaty that the Federation Cardassian Union signed, I guess, into law or whatever. The treaty that they signed, and basically it's threatening everything that they want to do, which was peace. They want peace between us and the Cardassian Union, even though we really don't hear a mention about a war between them. And you know, we've seen several times or several instances where their weapons are far less superior than ours. So whatever, but let's not talk about that. But like it's so basically, they need an operative to basically tear it from the inside out, and Ro happens to finish advanced tactical training, and where like I think what 50% sounds like Buds or something like that. Buds is Navy SEALs training, and. It you know, she's fresh out of the advanced training, tactical training, and they want to recruit her to infiltrate the Maquis ranks and find out what their operations are. And basically, you know, the Federation is going to capture them and basically clean up the mess. As she's infiltrated, she infiltrated successfully, and. Basically, she sympathizes with them, and it's all thanks to a guy, an older guy, who has common interests with her, likes her, and basically treats her like a daughter. And I'm assuming they were going off of a father-daughter relationship is what it turned into, or at least that's what it seemed like to me. And she it might have been that she thought she was like he was like her father.
That plays out very well because...
Yeah.
You know, because that role was played by Picard and their relationship and how she felt that Picard, you know, finally trusted her. And, you know, they get that father relationship. But then now in this episode, you can see that, oh, there is, and then that he sort of takes place. And so seeing that change of, you know, her deciding to continually tell Picard, yes, I can do this, I can do this, to the end where she decides to betray Picard for another father figure.
Right, I was going to get to that.
Oh, sorry.
That's why I was mentioning it. But no, you're good. You're good. I like where your mind is. But like, you know, basically, yeah, it's a great episode. I mean, she sympathizes. I can see that. If someone, I guess it would depend on the situation, but I could see myself doing something like that if I were to do that. But I mean, at the same time, you know, you got to, I mean, you're, an officer of a non-military association, and you're there to, you know, basically find out what's going on, and you're gonna tear them apart on, I mean, one piece at a time, and basically that's what it is. And yeah, I can see it. I mean, I can see it, totally see it. Yeah, it's a good episode.
It is. Lee has to say with. Journey's End, the Maquis two-parter, we come to preemptive strike, which builds up the Maquis as a threat again, showing the conflict among Federation and Maquis fighters internally and on the galaxy stage. The Maquis by this stage are a really fascinating introduction to Trek and originally planned to introduce Ro to DS9. I often wonder how often great it would be to have Ro go to Voyager. Would we have... had the conflict that Voyager really missed if she'd gone instead of the plank of wood that was Chakotay. These are Lee's words, not mine.
And I agree with them, but I don't think she would be good with Voyager. I really thought she could have been a really good, like what they did with the novels, which is great. She's now the station, she's a captain now, but like she was the station commander of Deep Space Nine before and after it got destroyed. Spoiler alert, sorry. For me reading the books, I mean, it was really awesome to you know, see her grow. I mean, after everything we've seen in her in Preemptive Strike, and to go back to being a captain of a starbase, a very tactical and strategic starbase, you know, is great. And I absolutely love her character. She's great in those books. Or whenever they're written, but like, yeah, it's very, that's one thing I really hate about the Maquis. It's a great storyline for Deep Space Nine and everything. Yeah. It's a starter for Voyager, mm-hmm. but I really wish they didn't eradicate them like they mm-hmm. did. in Voyager, or well, no, well, Deep Space Nine, they didn't eradicate them, but well, did they? Well, I guess Michael Eddington was really the last stand. I guess that was the end of the Maquis right then and there. Anyway, so Deep Space Nine fans will know what I'm talking about. But basically, they basically did a last stance, and practically everyone died. And only a handful came out. And then, of course, you know, we know in Voyager that they received their first subspace from Earth was the eradication of the Maquis. And, you know, obviously everyone's like, oh, my God. Oh! Even though it's been like 4 or 5 years since they really were a part of the cause, and now they're part of Starfleet. So I was like, okay, no need to, I hate to say it like this, but no need to cry over spilt milk. It's already done.
Yeah, Lee continues and says, always thought the character that Ro refers to as defecting to the Maquis was Chakotay, until it was later explained that he left the Academy before then. Another great chance to make Trek Universe really click that went missing. Felt like a good precursor at the time. Well, I don't think To the Journey hosts would agree with you, because they are Janeway Chakotay shippers all the way. To the journey.
To the journey. So, well, what'd you think of the episode?
I really liked it. And as you were talking about it, it was so funny because, yeah, Ro came back and came back from her tactical training. And I'm not kidding you. And I don't know why it like kept being pointed out, but every single time someone saw her, Ro, you look great. And I'm like, well, did she not look good beforehand? I mean, was she more fit? She still looked like the Ro, but yeah, like everyone's like, you look great. Training does good on you. You look great. And I was like, she looks the same. I don't know. That was just something minor that I picked up.
I didn't even notice that until you just said that. Cause yeah, they do say that quite a bit. I mean,
they do.
Maybe they were trying to emphasize that. It's vigorous and it's hard. It's not something that everyone would be able to do because, you know, like you said, you know, 50% of the damn class drops. So, yeah, maybe that's what they were trying to do.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So an interesting work, watching Journey's End and Preemptive Strike, and then hearing what you said, about Wesley and how he comes back and he's back in Starfleet. I mean, what does that say about the Starfleet message? You know, that we have both Wesley and Ro leaving Starfleet, but then in the end, to have the happy story, they both come back into the Starfleet fold. I thought that was interesting.
Well, I guess you could say the criminal justice system is more about rehabilitation, as we found out in the beginning of Voyager, that Paris was, yeah, he was serving time, but he was also being rehabilitated to be more productive into a society that it is in Star Trek. So what I'm thinking is that they're more forgiving and they're doing what the criminal justice system is supposed to do. Rehabilitate.
I'm so glad that you brought up Tom Paris, because I would like to ask this question. Do you think that there was a crossover miss with Voyager? Because here we have Tom Paris, and as all true Next Generation fans know, we saw Robert Duncan McNeil, who plays Tom Paris, actually in The Next Generation with the First Duty. And he shows up as Cadet Nick Locarno. And in that episode, just for a quick rundown, Wesley's at the Academy and they are doing some maneuver, and one of their classmates dies, and so there's an investigation. And Nick Locarno is the squadron leader, sort of like the Blue Angels of Starfleet Academy. And yeah. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, that was the cluster starburst or something like that. I think that's what it was. But yeah, but I think the reason why they didn't do that was for royalties, I think. I can't remember the reason why, but they were going to do it that way, where he got in trouble and what. And that would have been great.
Yeah, so that sets it up like, okay, so we have Nick Locarno, and at the end, you know, he is, you know, kicked out of Starfleet and, you know, got this, he's, you know, been thrown in jail, or sorry, you know, yeah, well, he tries to cover it up and then was kicked out of Starfleet. And so we have at the beginning of Voyager, Tom Paris, who is a former Starfleet officer who's been thrown in jail for activities with the rebel group, the Maquis. So it's like, we've got this former Starfleet who's in trouble. Couldn't we have taken Nick Locarno and just used that backstory to give in more context to Tom Paris? Well, actually, it would be Nick Locarno.
I think they did, only they just changed the name. I mean, really, they didn't change the story. I mean, because
exactly.
Like,
yeah. So why even change the name? I mean, it was having the same purpose, you know. But now we would have had, you know, Nick Locarno if he was Tom Paris. Then we understand. Oh yeah, this is why he was out of Starfleet. And then, you know, it was the same story. I just could have given. I don't know. Was it a miss there?
Well, like I said, you know, it's probably because of royalties. That's probably what it is. It's money. That's probably what it was. But, like, yeah, I agree. I totally agree. But, to me, that is his backstory. Nick is Tom Paris. I mean, just changed name and a slightly altered story because it was he falsified records for a shuttle accident. And basically, that's what it is. It was a whatever those performance vehicles are. I don't know. I don't think they're shuttlecrafts. But, yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, it's good. That is his backstory for me, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. So that was interesting. So we definitely, I guess we can mention the first duty as a setup of a could be story for Tom Paris, but a miss.
Something that we could also mention as well that later in TNG, there's an episode called The Price, and just like how Lee got stuck in the Delta Quadrant, he got too curious about a wormhole and now he's stuck there. So
serves him right.
Yeah, serves him right. He'll get back. We'll find a conduit or a subspace conduit of some sort. I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll
Voyager got home. Lee will get home. I'm confident.
Yeah. In 20 years from now, and we probably won't be hosts of this show anymore. But it correlates with the Voyager false prophets later on down the road in Voyager, and I absolutely love that they tied those two together because it's like, oh yeah, I remember that episode. That was a long time ago. So I love it when they do the continuity and bridge the two shows together. It's great.
Yeah. Not to skip out on another great, so we talked about the Borg and the Maquis, another good character that was introduced in Next Generation and continues on Voyager was Q. Mm. Did you like Q? Did you like him better in Next Gen or Voyager or the same?
I liked him more in TNG only because he had that comical side, but he also had that serious side, like he was teaching a lesson. Whereas Voyager, he wasn't doing that. It seemed like it's like, oh God, we got to deal with Voyager again, and I got to deal with Aunt Kathy all over again. And it just seems like she's a nuisance, just like he was in Deep Space Nine. He was a nuisance and he only appeared once. And on Deep Space Nine, and he was a nuisance. He was trying to be comical to a character that didn't give a damn about what he was doing and just said, you know what? I ain't taking your crap. Get out.
Right.
So, I mean, but I think it worked well. I mean, there are some good stories in Voyager that deal with Q. But I think the episodes in TNG with Q were far better. Than, except for Death Wish. Death Wish was actually one of my favorite episodes because we get to see the continuum and how endless it is and how boring it can get, and I could see that.
Right. Yeah, and in Death Wish we do get Riker coming back there. Mm. However, it just is washed away as, you know, Q
Thaddeus Riker in the Civil War. Yeah. Or something like that. I don't remember his name. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Riker wouldn't be around if it wasn't for him, or it wasn't for the other Q to save Thaddeus Riker in the Civil War.
Yeah.
American Civil War.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I like Q. I have seen a couple of the episodes, the Q in Voyager. And the one that always comes to my mind is when Q gives his son for Janeway to raise. You know, I just don't see next-gen Q and how he would have gotten to that point to Voyager Q, to hear take my kid type of thing. So, I don't know. I like next-gen Q better.
Is it Deja Q? Hold on a second. No, that's
no, that's a next-gen.
Yeah. Hide in, is it hide in?
No,
that's next gen.
Hide in Q is the one. That's, oh, I'm looking at the friggin'. Oh, you're looking at TNG list.
It's Q. Q2.
Yes, Q2. Yes, that is the one. Yes. Yep.
And yeah. Oh, it's his son. That's right. It's Keegan DeLancey.
Yeah,
it's
that's right.
Actual son. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. So,
yeah.
I didn't know that. I actually didn't know that. Little trivia.
Yes.
So what's next? What would you like to talk about? We're almost an hour, actually.
Yeah. Well, one other minor character that shows up on Voyager is Lieutenant Barclay. And tell us about Barclay's experience on Voyager, Richard.
Well, Barclay is the genius and mastermind of the Pathfinder program that we hear about in the later episode, or in the later seasons of Voyager. And basically, you know, it's a oversized telephone that can, you know, transmit messages, orders, whatever, and whatnot. And, you know, later on, well, it's very interesting. Actually, you know what? I can't believe I'm going to admit this, but when when they finally, I've watched Voyager the whole entire way through, but oh my god, I was a little bit tearful when I when they were talking about hearing about home and everything. And I'm like, oh my god, why am I crying?
it strikes a chord with you.
It did, and I didn't want it to, but like it's like, oh my god, you know, after. I think it was like season 5 or 6 or something. I think it was season 5 or 6. I can't remember which one it is. But like Pathfinder, when they finally got communication from home, I can only imagine. Even when they talk about like message in a bottle, and that's the episode where we get first introduced to the USS Prometheus, the advanced long-range tactical starship that's fondly used. as a military ship. Anyway, but like, you know, after, you know, it's basically a way mission for the doctor. And when he comes back and says, you know, I got the message to Starfleet and talked straight with headquarters. I'm like, oh my God, that one did it to me too. I'm like, oh, I'm like, imagine just all that, you know, being stuck out there for 5-6 years or something like that. And your first time talking to home is, you know, it's very heartfelt. I mm-hmm. love it. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's basically what Barclay was, and his whole mission was to make contact with Voyager when they found out that they were out there. So,
yeah. So very good tie-in. So yeah, we have covered the Borg, the Maquis. We talked about Q and Tom Paris, Nick Locarno. Anything else? Last thoughts on Voyager and Next Gen, Richard.
So we have one more character to talk about. That he was in TNG as well as now, and then he became more of a regular in Voyager. So, but I mean, I guess we don't have to tie it in. Again, probably royalty again. Cause,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So who is it?
So his name is Vorik, V-O-R-I-K.
Okay, and he was in Lower Decks?
Well, his character, just like with Tom Paris, his name was changed. I think it's Turek. I don't know, Torak, I don't know. T-A-U-R-I-K, and he was in Lower Decks, and he was one of those ensigns that were part of that. That's another episode that deals with the Maquis. It gives the relationship between the Bajorans and the Cardassians, and how abusive they can get. And basically, they used Ensign Sito as like a prisoner or something like that. And basically, what was going to happen is, like, you know, in order to get, so they're trying to smuggle a Cardassian across the border so he can give intel, because he doesn't want a war between the Federation and Cardassian. Well, in order to go back, he needed an excuse. So something like Ensign Sito is a Bajoran, and he was going to take her as a prisoner and then go back across the border, and that would be his excuse. Why? Mm-hmm. And all that. And then he was supposed to send her in a torpedo and then fly her back. Well, it got destroyed, and, well, she died. So Turok was one of those. It was showing like the lower enlisted. So, mm-hmm. you know, outside, you know, from their perspective, which is, I love that.
It's a great perspective. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was a part of that. So, and then of course, we never hear about him after that. And then Boric comes into engineering, lo and behold. And funny enough, that other guy is also an engineer too. So there's another one.
Yeah. So what are your final thoughts? Do you think that Next Gen, I mean, we talked about last time how Next Gen set up Deep Space Nine. Do you think Next Gen set up Voyager, or do you think that was more the responsibility of Deep Space Nine, or what are your thoughts with Next Gen and Voyager?
Well, when it deals with TNG and Voyager, I really think that they were testing the waters for Voyager, and obviously with Descent Part Two, you know, female captain. How would everyone like, you know, the Indians, Native American story, and also, you know, the Maquis story and whatnot. And I think it worked well. I don't know if that was their intention, but I mean, to me, Voyager, I mean, that piece of the story is like very, very, very small. I mean, because it only we really didn't deal with it for what I think it was like 4 or 5 episodes in the first season, and then sparsely throughout the whole entire 7 years or 7 seasons. So I think it's minute. I mean, the story that was more compelling and more relevant to Voyager was Journey's End, because obviously we hear about the Indians later on down, or Native Americans. They visit the Eskimos in Voyager. Or the aliens that they visited the Eskimos on Earth, and you know, it kind of ties that in. And you know, we solemnly hear about Chakotay's ancestry, about being a Native American and how they travel around. So I guess that's more relevant than most of them, because we really don't hear about Bajorans like we do in Deep Space Nine, and it's more for them. But I mean, mm-hmm. it's a great send off. It really is. So, especially for season 7.
Yeah. So. And I think Next Gen, I think they did try their best, but I think the lead into Deep Space Nine was a little bit more natural, obviously, because they were the show to come directly, you know, after, or, you know, during Next Gen. And so at the time, like, Next Gen wasn't, you know, running their new episodes when Voyager came on. But there was that crossover between with the movies. And so getting an actual storyline from the Next Gen, it's like that had to be done in hindsight, you know. Mm-hmm. And so not as much as what Next Gen did for Deep Space Nine with that setup, and how there were episodes that were there specifically designed to launch Deep Space Nine. So I think... it was more of a hindsight type thing. Well, what can we pull from Next Gen to tie into Voyager? But and I appreciate that, because it is keeping the continuity of Starfleet there. So
well, and you know, to be fair on Voyager, I mean, don't get me wrong, it had a rough first three seasons, and then it got really good. Or at least that's my opinion, of course. Mm-hmm. When they ran into the Equinox, that was my favorite. That was actually one of my favorite stories. But like, it's Voyager is truly a story on its own. It really is. I mean, it's if you want to talk about which, to me, which seasons were more unique than any other, it was Enterprise, TOS, and Voyager. And that's only because, well, and I guess TNG, all of them, but regardless.
All right, all of them.
Yeah, all of them. Screw it. But I mean, if you want to talk about more unique, I mean, Voyager truly was on its own and it had to prove itself on its own to make new stories, maybe even recreate new stories. But they're in a whole different part of space where they got no support. I mean, that's truly, you know, on its own. It's lost in the Delta Quadrant, and it's lost on UPN or whatever network it was on. Yeah. And so, or not lost, but like on its own.
Yes.
So, yeah. I mean, and I think that's, and it was, and the show was extremely brave to do that, or the network is extremely brave to do that, because I didn't like Voyager at first until it started really getting good, which was the latter half of Voyager. So,
yeah. Well, and I think when you say that, yeah, Voyager was on its own, and, you know, Voyager came because Deep Space Nine, well, it's so boring because it's on a space station, and all the critics that were criticizing Deep Space Nine. So, you know, but how do you have another ship named Enterprise when you've still got Picard's crew going around in movies? And it seems like a very good answer to all of these critics. All right, we're not going to do another station. We're going to have another ship. And yes, it's not the Enterprise, but that's okay. And yeah, it is. They are very much on their own. And I think that also pairs what Voyager did with them being on their own is very similar to Enterprise, you know, and how Captain Archer, he's out there in space. There's no one else that he can call for backup, you know, and I think those two parallel stories run very nicely with Enterprise following that. I mean, albeit before the original series timeline, but, you know, it's that same theme of, yeah, okay, we're out here and getting, again, back to that family situation of you're my family. And so those themes definitely ring true and is what Trek is to me.
Ding. I agree. Yeah. I agree. I totally agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they truly were pioneers of or at least in the 90s for Trek. I mean, it paved the way for really good television, or at least I thought it was great television. I mean, I got hooked on Enterprise and I couldn't stop. And same thing with Voyager when it first came out too, and Deep Space Nine, I couldn't stop. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I understand. I've seen all the interviews of them talking about it's a space station, you know, you're about exploring space. But it's like, you know, at that time, we've already explored quite a bit, and why not have the action come to us? So, I mean, it's a great story. I love Deep Space Nine. It's a great story. I'm excited for the new one.
Yes, me too. All right.
But I'm not listening to anything. All my feeds, if it says Discovery, nope, I don't want to hear about it. I don't care. I don't care if it's Klingon. Nope, mm-mm.
Just listen to Brandon. He's always posting, it's going to be the best, and he's so optimistic, and I just, yep, it's going to be good, and I'm going to watch it. Who's not going to watch it, first of all?
Yeah, so, exactly. If you're a true fan, yep, you'll watch it. It doesn't matter if you hate it or love it. Doesn't matter. You're gonna watch it. Who cares?
So we will have to, as we watch it, figure out how the next generation is helping and launching,
or how the Discovery is helping TNG.
Yes. Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. All right. Well, the road to Voyager isn't the only topic that we've been talking about here on the network. Here's a quick look at what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Was the BBC wrong in doing this? Not under the auspices that this is a kid's show and showing it during, you know, when kids would be watching. Because if you think about it, there's 75 other episodes that they did show, some with some minor editing, which I think would have been appropriate.
The 602 Club.
I think they did a great job. casting her, casting Melissa as Supergirl, because she has the right mixture of that Kansas Midwest meekish kind of personality, but you know what she's capable of. And I think that's a really nice analog to the way that Christopher Reeve played Clark.
Stage 9, a podcast about the people who make Star Trek.
He has worked with Robert Rodriguez. He was Rodriguez's cinematographer before Rodriguez started shooting his own movies, having worked with him on From Dusk Till Dawn, not the TV show From Dusk Till Dawn, the original masterpiece.
That's always where we go right off the rails. You throw in the word masterpiece right there.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
You can listen to every show on the network at Trek.fm with links for iTunes, streaming services, and a direct download link. This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPod, iPad, Kindle, Android, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Thank you, Audible, for supporting Earl Grey and Trek FM. If you are a weekly listener and would like to directly help Earl Grey, please consider becoming a patron of Trek FM. At patreon.com/trekfm, you can choose a pledge level and receive rewards for becoming a Trek FM patron. At $5 a month, gets you into our patron zone. This is where you get exclusive content and access to our early releases of our podcast. $15 a month will get you participating in our monthly roundtable discussions. These are so fun, and this is how I got started on the network. And at $25 a month, we'll get you associate producer credits for any podcast that you choose. And we would like to take this moment to thank our current Patreon associate producer, Michael Huter. Thank you for supporting Earl Grey. Another way to help out the network and get cool stuff is to visit Redbubble. At redbubble.com/shop/trekfm, you can find amazing designs by Aaron Harvey, our network. Oh, what is he? He's our art guy. He does everything. And have you got stuff from Redbubble at all, Richard?
I have. I have 6 or 7 shirts, Trek FM. Each different from each other, and I wish I could turn my computer around, but yeah. I actually have a sticker that says Trek FM on it.
Oh, awesome. Yep, I have a couple of their t-shirts and love wearing it and supporting the network. So with each purchase, a portion of the sales does go to Trek FM. You can connect with other Trek FM listeners on our favorite place, the Babel Group. You can search that, B-A-B-E-L, on Facebook, or you can like the facebook.com/trekfm page for show updates and announcements. The network is also on Twitter at Trek FM. If you would like to contact Lee, Richard, or Amy, that's me, visit trek.fm/contact to send us a subspace message, and we just might read your email on a future podcast. You can also find us on social media. So, Richard, where can people find you on the interwebs?
Well, they can find me popping in and out of the Babel Conference. I'd like to cause trouble here and there, but don't tell anyone. and I also am on Twitter at xransom. How about yourself?
Well, I am also on Twitter, and I'm still trying to figure it out. I've just grew up on Facebook. Well, grew up, you know, since it came out. So Twitter's sort of new to me. And I always wonder if people are following me, if they're going to figure out what our next podcast is on, because what I'm watching sort of leads into what we're talking about. So my last 3 tweets were, I'm watching Preemptive Strike. I'm watching Journey's End, you know. So that's always fun. You could get a little hint as to what we're going to be talking about if you follow me on Twitter. But I also enjoy the Babel Conference. I love that, and it is a great place to talk Star Trek, and a very good atmosphere and lots of great people that we interact with. Join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
Today is a good day to die.
Great joy and gratitude.